This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 4th, 2012. I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar. The 14th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series begins on Saturday, June 30th with the Aaron Goldberg Trio. This series will continue with the Composer's Showcase Saturday, July 28th and guitarist Vic Churis Saturday, August 11th. Performances begin at 8 p.m. in Walton Arts Center's Star Theatre. Tickets, including limited cabaret seating, available at 442-5600 or waltonartscenter.org for more information. On this edition of Ozarks, recipients of Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation Education Grant plan to implement saving programs for post-high school education, and more about the upcoming concert in the 4th Annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. Also on the show today, we find out more about Walmart's plans for its e-commerce division. But first, these items of note. The Arkansas State Fair Board will meet later this month to discuss whether to stay in its current location or move. However, some residents around the fairgrounds are concerned if the location remains the same, eminent domain will be declared in an attempt to expand the grounds. But fairgrounds spokesman Ralph Schoptow says he doesn't expect that will happen.
We're a private, nonprofit organization, and we do not have the authority to eminent domain, and that's kind of been our stand all along. Now, the state of Arkansas owns the portion of the fairgrounds that all the buildings are on, and I suppose the state of Arkansas would have the authority to eminent domain, but I don't see them doing that, and especially displacing families and homes.
The next board meeting will be on June 14th at the fairgrounds. Record dry weather for the month of May is leaving Arkansas with a high chance of forest fires for June. Some areas of the state received virtually no rain during the last month, and current dry conditions have the Arkansas Forestry Commission on alert. Mike Cagle is the forester in charge of much of the area in high risk. He says the conditions are just right for forest fires.
We haven't had much rainfall lately, and we're under a high fire danger rating because of lower humidities, the dry fuel moistures for the different burning materials that we have, and in the winds, and all those things play into higher fire danger.
Cagle says the Forestry Commission has been understaffed due to recent budget problems, but many local volunteer fire departments are stepping up to help fight fires as they develop. The average price for a gallon of gas in Arkansas is nearly 30 cents lower than this time last year. According to the website GasBuddy.com, the average cost for a gallon of gasoline inside the state is $3.25, about a nickel cheaper than the cost a week ago. The cost of gasoline in Arkansas remains lower than the national average of $3.61 per gallon. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will continue its season with a berth in next week's Super Regionals. Arkansas advanced to the round of 16 by winning three games over the weekend in the Houston Regionals. Arkansas will find out its opponent, dates, and location for the next round tonight. The Razorbacks will play the winner of tonight's regional final between Baylor and Dallas Baptists. If Baylor wins the game, the Bears will host Arkansas for a best-of-three series in Waco next weekend. Should Dallas Baptist beat Baylor, the NCAA will decide if Arkansas hosts the games next weekend. Former Arkansas Razorback Stacey Lewis is now a three-time LPGA winner. She grabbed the Champions Trophy at this weekend's ShopRite LPGA Classic in New Jersey. It is the third tournament she's won since turning professional. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals wrap up their Texas road trip tonight in Frisco. Last night, the Naturals defeated Frisco 10-3 to remain within three games of first place. The Naturals return home to begin a four-game homestand against the Arkansas Travelers Wednesday night. This is Ozarks at Large. Although Walmart may be the world's largest retailer, it ranks fourth in e-commerce, trailing behind Amazon, Staples, and Apple. Last week, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended a media conference at Embassy Suites in Rogers, traditionally held a day before the company's annual shareholders meeting. Briefings covered all aspects of Walmart's business, including the company's aggressive strategy to corner the lucrative e-commerce marketplace.
Facilitating the briefing was Neil Ashe, president and CEO of Walmart Global E-Commerce. He took the position last January, replacing retiring Eduardo Castro Wright. Previously, he led media giant CBS's interactive division and served as CEO of CNET Networks.
About 2 years ago, the company realized that we needed an umbrella strategy for global e-commerce, and we needed that strategy around the world. And so we formed the unit Global E-Commerce, and based in San Bruno, and we started recruiting talent.
Data show that half of all Walmart customers now shop online, yet most are still shopping at places like Amazon.com. Because Walmart trails in e-commerce, the world's largest retailer has been investing hundreds of millions of dollars to recruit top talent and technical code writers, vastly improve online search capability, and purchase small internet companies to build a unique and compelling interactive e-commerce system. What percentage of last year's net sales, which grew 5.9% to $443 billion, is attributed to e-commerce is not known, but the saturation of U.S. storefronts has the company looking at e-commerce as a new profitable frontier.
And then when we start to talk about the Walmart assets, you can start to get really, really excited. The ability to reach 200 million customers every single week, to be in 27 countries, to have over 10,000 stores, to have the best logistics and fulfillment network in the world, to have a better and different relationship with suppliers than anyone else in the world. These are unparalleled assets to bring to bear to this next generation of the consumer that we are serving at Global E-Commerce.
And because Amazon.com is increasingly merchandising on-demand items traditionally purchased at Walmart stores like baby, beauty, and pet items, Walmart has to keep pace. At Walmart Labs is the company's new mobile commerce unit linking customer smartphones to products purchased, especially for iPhone and iPad users. Load the in-store mode app to price check by scanning barcodes in the store, investigate product history via QR codes, and order out of stock items, a pilot project using the Endless Aisle app.
We really feel like your smartphone is your personal remote control device, and so we want that to empower your experience when you are in our stores. And so we have a program called Store Connect, where we are providing the ability for you to gain information about our stores while you're in our stores, for you to find products while you're in our store. And we're really excited about that. And that's probably the precursor to a number of interesting things that we can do with that device and you while you're in the store.
50% of Walmart shoppers own smartphones, and data show that many use them to shop. And because of improvements to its e-commerce division, Walmart.com users have tripled over the past year. Walmart is also geofencing, which allows registered mobile in-store shoppers to be texted with time and location-sensitive deals and coupons. And there's an iPad app called Local Ad to check out special deals.
So you will have the same experience as if you were in a store. And one of the coolest applications on this is is what we call in-store mode. So your ability to have a personal GPS for our store, our experience in the store, which already 10% of the, I think it's been out 3 weeks, 10% of the users of the mobile app are already using that on a regular basis.
Walmart Labs now operates Vudu streaming video services to rival Netflix, provides disk to digital cloud storage for all your DVDs, and also purchased a thing called Cosmix, a social media web aggregator, which allows the retailer to check the social genome pulse, networking consumers to potential purchases, and vice versa. And because Walmart is losing critical holiday shoppers to other e-commerce providers, dropping from nearly 60% to 53% last year, Neil Ashe said the company launched a social gifting platform called ShopeeCat.
We launched a program called ShopeeCat. ShopeeCat is a gift-giving application that's resident in Facebook. We really, in that it's about giving the gifts, but it's also about us figuring out how to be relevant in a Facebook environment. So we're building an application so that we can connect with consumers and they can connect with their friends and we can be the provider of that commerce experience. Really started to take off nicely, and we think that this will be a trend on Facebook and in e-commerce, and I think we're one of the first people to be there.
Those who sign up on ShopeeCat can also subscribe to Walmart's Goodies, where shoppers are delivered a secret box of artisanal foods and other edible samples not currently stocked on Walmart store shelves.
We have the largest assortment of any retailer in the United States, but we realize that we don't have everything. And so it's that's perhaps the best demonstration of the pivot to the customer focus that we want to emphasize online, which is whether we have it or not, we want to satisfy your desire. And so you'll see us do more and more of that. It's amazing, as the, I'll just add on, as the new guy, e-commerce guy, to see what the stores are capable of doing. The fact that they can turn over a store in a day is pretty amazing. And you know, you'll see that you saw that at Blitz Period last year, where they moved forward the date, and we were in the marketplace. That 4,000 stores in the United States all had to make that change, all in about a 12-hour period. That's cool.
Walmart's foray into crowdsourcing with its much-publicized Get on the Shelf initiative attracted lots of media buzz.
We operated a contest we called Get on the Shelf. So crowdsourcing is a term you hear a lot in the Internet. One of the powers of the Internet is that we can make available access to people, as I said, that never had access before. There are a lot of inventors that would love to get product on the Walmart shelves. So we ran a tiered process where people could submit an application via YouTube video for their product. We just announced the winners of this several weeks ago, and they're all the three finalists happen to be here for Shareholders Week. You might bump into them along the way. But those the top product made its way to the Walmart shelf. So again, access and using the Internet for a 360 view of our business.
The top three winners were Humankind Water, a company that donates 100% of its net profits towards clean drinking water infrastructure in underdeveloped nations. The second, Plate Topper, which stores leftover food right onto your dinner plate. And the third is Snap-It Eyeglass Repair Kit. Walmart's newest online initiative, Pay with Cash, targets unbanked consumers, greatly ignored by most retailers, but much coveted by Walmart.
We launched it in the last month. The uptick has been really exciting, but probably the most interesting piece of the puzzle for us, and with this, you buy online and you come to the store, you pay for the store, it still gets shipped to your house, so you don't have to even pick up the product in the store. It's still going to your house, but you have the opportunity to pay in the store. One of the most interesting things about this that we didn't expect, frankly, is that only 60% of the people actually pay with cash. So we're finding a need. 40% of the others pay with a credit card or a check or some other tender. But we found that the customer has that relationship. This customer has that relationship with the store and wants to have that that visual presence with their. With the store associates.
Walmart.com operators realized the girth of their unbanked consumer population after observing usage in their pop-up stores, those interactive computer kiosks in place for a while inside some Walmarts, and they served as test labs. Walmart e-commerce is also catering to affluent customers by listing, for example, deals on exclusive high-end electronics, all part of a global strategy. President and CEO of Global E-commerce, Neil Ash.
We either have or are developing operations in the areas where the most growth is. So, in addition to the Americas, the U.S., Canada, Mexico, etc., we have a thriving business in Brazil. We've announced that we hope to take 51% interest in a company called Yihaodian in China, which is the one of the fastest growing e-commerce businesses in China. We also have a thriving business in the UK, Japan, etc. So we are thinking globally about our opportunity in e-commerce and are moving aggressively to position ourselves for that opportunity.
And to build a global platform, Walmart's headhunting top talent from around the world, logging every product manufactured in the world, and seeking to virtually connect to every shopper in the world. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit walmartlabs.com. Last week has been a very busy one, especially for the world's largest retailer, as it wrapped up its shareholders' meeting for this year. Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net, is here to talk about that and give us a weekly update on the latest in Arkansas business and politics.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political stories of the last week. Windstream Corporation said Thursday it would pare its management ranks by 375 to 400 workers, roughly 3% of its total workforce. The cuts will be completed during the third quarter, and the Little Rock-based telecom said the restructuring would save $30 to $40 million annually. It's initially unclear how many of the job cuts could impact Little Rock, where the company's headquarters is located. CEO Jeff Gardner said the downsizing would increase the efficiency of decision-making and position the company for longer-term success. Arkansas economic and tourism officials launched a new alliance, the Arkansas Production Alliance, that pulls regions of the state together to promote the film and digital production industry. Spending about $24,000 in public and private monies, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, the Little Rock Regional Chamber of Commerce, and the Northwest Arkansas Council launched a website, ArkansasProduction.com, which will house locations for potential movie or television productions and resumes of film crew talent. Amidst the backdrop of a major bribery scandal in Mexico, Walmart kicked off its annual shareholders meeting in Northwest Arkansas. It is the retail giant's 50th anniversary, a cause for celebration. But there will be plenty of shareholders not in a celebratory mood. Several large institutional shareholders are calling for new board leadership in the wake of a recently disclosed alleged Mexican bribery affair. That scandal hasn't hurt the company's stock, however. After plummeting about 8% nearly a month ago when that scandal broke, Walmart shares hit a 12-year high this week. A federal judge declared the North Little Rock School District unitary on Tuesday. The Little Rock School District was declared unitary in 2007. The Pulaski County Special School District has yet to be declared unitary. The three county school districts receive about $70 million a year in funding from the state to address desegregation efforts and programs. All of the eight metropolitan areas in or connected to Arkansas had jobless rate decreases in April compared to March 2012 and April 2011. That is good news. The Fayetteville-Springdale-Rogers metro area reported the lowest unemployment rate in the state at 5.3%, while the Pine Bluff region landed at the highest spot, 8.8%. Arkansas's overall jobless rate was 7.2% in April, down from 7.4% during March, and below the 8% rate in April 2011. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
KUAF comes from the CICA Summer Music Festival, June 18th through July 7th. This Eureka Springs Festival features international performers including the St. Petersburg String Quartet and the Eroica Trio, June 20th through 23rd at the Odd. A performance schedule, tickets, and more information available at cicamusicfestival.org. This is Ozarks at Large, and I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar. Even with schools such as the University of Arkansas and Arkansas State University, this state is ranked 49th in the United States for young adults with a post-secondary education. Recipients of a grant from the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation plan to implement saving programs for post-high school schooling and improve that ranking. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas has this report.
the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County, and the University of Arkansas School of Social Work have all come together with the hope of reducing poverty while improving education. An individual development account program will be put into place to help 40 high school seniors continue their education when they graduate. Sharice West is president and CEO of the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation in Little Rock. She says that IDAs, individual development accounts, are matched savings accounts that began in the 1990s.
They are particularly useful and most often used with folks of moderate to low income means, more modest means. And what makes it special is you receive an additional deposit each time to add to your savings. And it is called a match, and it's usually 1 to 4 times the size of each deposit you make. So, for example, if you receive a 2-to-1 match, each time you deposit $25, you'll get an additional $50 towards your savings goals. In most cases, IDAs are specifically used for three purposes: starting a business, buying a home, or for going back to school. We, the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, awarded $100,000 to the organization to jointly do IDA programs for high school students.
This program is the result of a grant written by two professors at the U of A School of Social Work, Marcia Shoeb and Camera Christie. They've been working on IDA research for years. Their program is slightly unique in that it is youth-focused. A lot of IDAs aren't. And they plan to heavily evaluate the outcome. Here's how it works. 40 incoming high school seniors in Fayetteville, Springdale, and Lincoln will be chosen to receive the matching funds. The funds will then be used for their schooling after high school. This program is also different in that the schooling doesn't have to be a traditional 4-year college. And as the students will receive just $2,000 at the end of the program, vocational schooling sort of makes sense. Here's Camera Christie.
Well, in fact, oftentimes it's the trade schools and the training schools that are more practical, and it's not as long to be in school, it doesn't cost as much, and they can get out earlier and start making money. And it really fits well with both the new president of the University of Arkansas system, Don Bobbitt, who really has talked about the idea of the university reaching out around education for the whole state, as well as our nation's president, Obama, has also talked about the importance of people going beyond high school and not necessarily 4-year college high school. That's the future of our country, is training and getting skilled workers beyond high school.
In addition to the funds, the students will also receive education, financial education. Several Saturdays this fall, the students will participate in mandatory coursework. Marcia Shoeb explains what they'll be learning.
Budgeting and investing, and also investing in your education. What does it mean to do this? How do you rent an apartment, you know, and credit cards? What are interest rates, and what does that compounded interest mean, and how to open a bank account? Things of that nature that all of us need, but many of us didn't get in high school.
The group of students will be compared to 40 other students who did not receive the funds or the training.
And we're going to ask them the same questions, so to see if there's any differences. One thing we like to do is extend our research every time we do it. And so one thing we've added with this research is we're looking at hunger and food insecurity with households. You know, Arkansas is often 48th, 49th in the country in terms of income and poverty and child poverty, and those numbers continue. And actually, we are very low in the number of students that also go on to post-secondary education compared with the rest of the country. So food insecurity is a big thing in Arkansas. So we want to ask questions about, do you have enough to eat, you know, every day, and are there days that you go without, or things of that nature, and to see with, you know, with asset development, if that improves over time for the treatment group versus the group that was not in the study. So this is a very short term, and Winthrop Rockefeller knows that. This is a pilot study, so we are going to look at 3 points in time, which spans only 2 years. So it's hard to see huge outcomes in that short period of time, but we're hoping to see what we can find.
These students will be paid for their participation in the surveys. The recruitment process begins soon, and it will be income eligible.
And we have a flyer that we'd like to give to parents and kids and send through emails and such. And we're going to do an income eligibility. So we're looking at the parents' income tax from last year. And so they will have to be 200% or less of the federal poverty guidelines in order to be eligible. And that will not be a problem here.
For a family of four, it's $44,000 a year. So where are they getting the money to save for themselves?
You know, it's funny. We get that a lot as well. Low-income people can't save. And, you know, they're high school students.
Right.
Most high school students work. And go to school full time. Oftentimes, I'm one of the cases, we work to help feed our family. We help to pay the mortgage or the rent. And so we are opening it up. If they get gifts for their birthdays, if they get money from work, you know, wherever they get the money, they can deposit into their savings account. So we're including parents when we do the recruitment. So we want the whole family to know that we are investing in your child and we know you want to as well. So let's see what we can all do.
With most federally funded IDAs, contributions must be earned income. But since this is youth-focused and funded by Winthrop Rockefeller, they don't have to be directly earned by the students. Michael Lanier is the director of the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County, a community action organization that's aim is to get people out of poverty. He says this is a good collaboration between his organization and the U of A. EOA will be managing the accounts and aiding in the education program.
It's really more of a study program. It's a two-part thing. One, it is helping the youth, but the other part of it is it's learning as to what works better, what doesn't work very well, so you can tailor future programs to, you know, learn from our experiences here.
And we'll have the results in a couple of years. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkan Songs. Michael Burks was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, July 30, 1957, and allegedly first held a guitar in his hands 2 years later. His father, Frederick Burks, played bass at clubs at night after working the steel mills. Michael's grandfather, Joe Burks, also played guitar in Camden, Arkansas, where Michael would visit during summers. It was in Camden that Michael was said to have played his first gig at age six with his cousin's band. To learn guitar, Michael's father would give him a dollar if he learned a particular blues song in a day. After that study plan worked a little too well, Frederick Burks changed tactics by offering Michael a switchin' instead if he didn't learn a song. Burks' family finally moved to Camden in Ouachita County in the early 1970s while Michael was still a young teen. There, Michael's father established the Bradley Ferry Country Club, a 300-seat venue that hosted R&B and blues musicians such as O.V. Wright and Arkansas-er Johnny Taylor. Young Michael Burks, already long interested in guitar, was soon backing musicians at the club and performing there himself. For around a decade at the Bradley Ferry Country Club and beyond, Burks honed his guitar and performing chops, and he developed a blistering Albert King-inspired lead style and an equally muscular vocal technique.
No, it's all.
the Bradley Ferry Country Club closed in the early 1980s, and Michael Burks largely left music for more than a decade, working at Camden's Lockheed Martin Missile Component Plant. Following a separation from his wife, Michael moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where one of his brothers lived. An invitation to perform during intermission at a Chick Willis club date there rekindled Michael Burks' musical ambitions. He returned to South Arkansas, determined to start a new band, and returned to blues music. In 1997, the debut album of Michael Burks, age 40, was self-released. Called From the Inside Out, it was recorded by Stuart Bayer of Little Rock in the capital city's Quapaw Quarter and featured all Burks' compositions. From there, Burks signed with Alligator Records of Chicago, Illinois. His 2001 album, Make It Rain, drew raves from Billboard and the Chicago Sun-Times, among others. 2004's I Smell Smoke and 2008's Iron Man solidified his reputation through the decade as a forceful blues performer. And, as Michael Burks continued to win accolades, play festivals, and tour internationally, he seemed perpetually poised for something bigger.
I was born down south, raised in the sticks, picking and playing ever since I was six. I play all for my mama.
Decade seemed equally full of promise for Arkansas-er Michael Burks, with the fifth album ready for summer 2012 release and a full touring schedule, including a June 2nd club date in Little Rock. But it wasn't to be. On May 6, 2012, returning from a European tour, Michael Iron Man Burks died of a heart attack at the Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport in Atlanta, Georgia. Later that month, a public memorial and tribute concert was held for Burks on Bradley Ferry Road in Camden. Michael Burks was 54. Here in its entirety is Arkansas-er Michael Burks of Camden and Ouachita County with Jammin' at the Wheel from 1997, recorded in Little Rock from his debut album, From the Inside Out.
We'll be right back. Michael Iron Man Burks of Ouachita County with Jammin' at the Wheel from his debut album, recorded in Little Rock. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
It's Monday, the 4th of June, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar, and with me is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Today's road trip day.
Yay!
The Jersey Boys, the touring production, which tells the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, is all around the region. It was a Tony Award winner for Best Musical on Broadway, and it will be on stage Wednesday through June 24th at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, and from June 12th to July 15th at the AT&T Performing Arts Center in Dallas. Ticket prices vary. You can visit jerseyboysinfo.com. Also in the region, starting tomorrow at the Starlight Theater in Kansas City in the Heights.
Okay, which was recently here.
And is fabulous. Fabulous. Starting on the 8th, which is Friday, or rather on the 8th, Barry Manilow is playing at the BOK Center in Tulsa. On the 9th, Bill Cosby is at the Winspear Opera House in Dallas. Also on the 9th, Dennis Miller is at the Hard Rock Casino in Tulsa.
Okay.
And on the 20th, Steve Martin is at the Robinson Center in Little Rock.
We should go.
Okay. So there's your road trips.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On Monday, we'll meet a young pianist from Venezuela. She told me she learned to love the piano when she listened to her mother playing.
I would listen to her play Beethoven and Chopin all the time at home.
We'll meet pianist Vanessa Perez coming up on Monday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today, right after the encore edition of Ozarks at Large, here on KUAF 91.3 FM. The 4th annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival reaches the halfway point Thursday night with a program of music from Haydn and Beethoven. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked about the third concert of the season with one of the organizers and musicians involved with the festival.
This Thursday night, June 7th, the third concert in the 4th annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival takes place. Music from Haydn and Beethoven. Generally, it's Stephen Gates, cellist, who talks to me about the concerts, but we've moved up the string line or down the string line, I'm not sure. Violinist Dr. Urgene Kong is with me. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, what do you like about these chamber concerts in the middle of summer?
Well, I love the intensity of it, actually.
Really?
I love that there are six sets of programs back-to-back. I love that the summer allows for that. The academic year would make it impossible. And I like that there are guest artists. We have a chance to visit with other musicians. And I love just working, really getting my hands dirty and feeling like there's a certain momentum that having the 6 weeks achieves. There's a lot of stress involved as well, but it's a lot of fun.
So Thursday night, 9:30 or 10, you're done with one performance. Are you on Friday morning thinking about the concert that's then just 6 days away?
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually kind of what I enjoy when I say that momentum and that fast-paced intensity. Usually there's a time of a cool down, sometimes even a cool down from the instrument, but there's almost no time that this allows mentally or physically. And so, of course, one has to be careful for performance injuries. But I also like that there's a certain kind of clumping effect musically that happens. Almost you learn something from the last previous concert, and you sort of, I feel that I start from another level, having had the experience of preparing these concerts from prior weeks.
Most of the concerts have three or four pieces.
Yes.
One coming up this week, just two.
That's right. The septet is actually a huge work. It's six movements. It also is a huge ensemble, as you can see. And we thought that it would be a nice change, perhaps, to have two works, but a work that is six movements. Interestingly, when we programmed this, we didn't think about it, but upon studying it a little bit, I realized the pieces actually are only composed about 3 years from each other. The Sunrise Quartet was composed in 1797, and the Septet was composed in 1800. Beethoven also was, of course, a student of Haydn, and these Opus 76 string quartets, the Haydn string quartets, comprise sort of Haydn's mature style, and of course Beethoven, the septet, as you see, is Opus 20. It's one of his earlier works, and so I thought that that was an exciting coupling that we didn't intend. We just sort of thought it might be nice to have a small ensemble and a large ensemble. We sort of associate Haydn with the earlier classical style, and then Beethoven, of course, in the Romantic. So it's that's also sort of fun when we start to see connections that we didn't necessarily intend. But the two works, I think, will be very satisfying.
This bold, big Beethoven septet in E-flat, you mentioned a large ensemble.
Yes.
How many people will be with you on stage?
There'll be seven people, and I think the interesting thing is that there'll be clarinet, bassoon, and horn, which to me comprise of the mid-range tessitura-wise, and then a quartet, but not the string quartet like you will see in the Haydn, but violin, viola, cello, and double bass. So to me, the general ensemble will be mid to lower range, which is really exciting. And there won't be a flute or an oboe, which I think is usually the wind soprano counterpart to violin. And so what you will see in this piece with the Beethoven is that the clarinet and the violin have a lot of intertwining lines, which usually would be taken up by flute or oboe.
Over the course of just the first half of this year's festival, just the first three concerts, the instruments you generally think of with, but also you've had trombone, harpsichord, and all these other instruments. It seems like this year you're really stretching out and getting even more of the faculty and guest artists involved.
Yes, yes. And we were really excited about that possibility. I think, you know, chamber music, you know, includes all the instruments. And for whatever reason, the composers that we have chosen in prior years have tended to prefer the string instruments, or let's say the string chamber music tends to be more prolific, and there's a certain kind of clumping that happens. A lot of wind instruments tend to clump with each other. Mm-hmm. A lot of the brass instruments tend to clump with each other in some of the chamber music literature. But of course, as this year shows, not necessarily the case at all. I think what's been interesting for us is that there's a very different listening process that's involved, just because fundamentally, I think, I couldn't explain the science behind it, but the science behind a stringed sound and a wind sound and a brass sound is very different. And so trying to meld the two or three different sonic worlds together has been exciting and interesting, because I think as instrumentalists, we tend to be specialists. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that I'm much more comfortable and have more experience in string chamber music. So it's been so it's been very exciting to branch out in that respect and program these other works that I was not familiar with.
This will be at 7:30 back in Stella Boyle, now that the shareholders meeting is over.
Yes.
And it's still free.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, three more concerts. Then in, let's see, late June, you're done with the festival.
Yes.
Will you then take a respite from your instrument for a few days or a week or so?
Well, we certainly won't be in performance mode. To me, the latter half of the summer is sort of my hibernation period. It's a period for me to start planning for the next season. It's a period for me to start studying new music. There's so much studying that can happen and experience that can be had without the instrument. And I think that's been wonderful, too, because one is so confined to the physicality of the instrument when one is practicing with the instrument. Mm-hmm. But there's also the concept of mental practicing, which some musicians prescribe to, some musicians don't. But certainly just looking at a score, there's so much that I can learn about what the composer might have intended or wanted. And I think actually that precedes, at least for me, the process before I even begin to pick up the instrument.
Really, looking at the score and...
Yes, and just sort of get a lay of the land, so to speak, and just understand what the composer's conceptions may have been with the music. And then, of course, with the instrument, then you realize these notes on a page.
Look forward to the Haydn and Beethoven at Stella Boyle Smith, 7:30 Thursday night.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Erjean Kang talked with Kyle Kellams about the next concert in the 4th Annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. It begins at 7:30 Thursday night inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the University of Arkansas campus and is free.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 4th of June, 2012. It's the 40th birthday of the novelist Joe Hill, born Joseph Hillstrom King in Herman, Maine, 1972, author of two novels, Heart-Shaped Box and Horns, and a collection of short stories, 20th Century Ghosts. Joe Hill, who used a pen name because he wanted to see if he could make it as a writer on his own merit and not as the son of the novelist Stephen King. It was on this date in 1896, a young engineer, Henry Ford, completed the building and successfully tested his first experimental automobile, which he called the quadricycle. It was on four bicycle tires. He'd been working on it for 2 years out in the shed behind his house on Bagley Avenue in Detroit. It was all ready to test when he discovered it was too wide to go through the door of the workshop, so he had to take an axe to the door frame and the bricks and open up the garage, and soon he was rolling down Grand River Avenue. Two-cycle, four-horsepower engine. It could go up to 20 miles per hour. It had two gears and no brakes, ran on ethanol. It was steered by a tiller. Was not much to look at, but the test drive was a success. It was on this date, 1913, the British suffragist Emily Wilding Davison threw herself in front of George V's racehorse at the Epsom Derby, one of the most famous horse races in the world. She crawled under the rail and stepped in front of the horse. She was intending to stick a suffragette flag to the saddle, but the horse ran straight into her. She was knocked into the air, never regained consciousness, died of her injuries 4 days later. And it was on this date, 1919, the 19th Amendment passed the Senate and gave American women the right to vote, an amendment drafted by Susan B. Anthony with the help of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. It was first formally introduced in 1878. It didn't come up before the Senate in 1887. It was voted down, wasn't considered again until 1914, defeated again. But in 1918, President Wilson threw his support behind the suffrage movement. During the war, women had entered the workforce in large numbers. Wilson said, "We have made partners of the women in this war. Shall we admit them only to a partnership of suffering and sacrifice and not to a partnership of right?" And the amendment passed both houses of Congress the following spring. Here's a poem for today by E.E. Cummings. It may not always be so. It may not always be so. And I say that if your lips, which I have loved, should touch another's, and your dear strong fingers clutch his heart as mine in time not far away, if on another's face your sweet hair lay in such a silence as I know, or such great writhing words as uttering overmuch stand helplessly before the spirit at bay. If this should be, I say, if this should be you of my heart, send me a little word that I may go unto him and take his hands, saying, accept all happiness from me. Then shall I turn my face and hear one bird sing terribly afar in the lost lands. A poem, It May Not Always Be So, by E.E. Cummings, from 100 Selected Poems, published by Grove Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, offering online review monitoring and management services for businesses that know the importance of online reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. And by Nook, Simple Touch with Glow Light by Barnes & Noble, designed for bedtime reading. Glow Light offers paper-like reading with the lights on or off, available at neighborhood Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The 14th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series begins on Saturday, June 30th, with the Aaron Goldberg Trio. This series will continue with the Composer's Showcase Saturday, July 28th, and guitarist Vic Juris Saturday, August 11th. Performances begin at 8 p.m. in Walton Arts Center's Star Theater. Tickets, including limited cabaret seating, available at 442-5600 or waltonartscenter.org for more information. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Athletic Club, offering a network of support, information, and guidance to help achieve fitness goals and aspirations for individuals, friends, and families. Information regarding fitness training, weight loss, healthy living, and more is available at fayac.com or 587-0500. The ninth grade will be moving to Fayetteville High School in August of 2015, creating an opportunity to reconfigure the grades that will attend junior highs, middle schools, and elementary schools that same year. A series of public meetings will be held to provide district patrons with the opportunity to hear proposals and provide input. The meetings will be held at 6 p.m. on the following dates and locations: Wednesday, June 6th, Owl Creek School Cafeteria; Monday, June 11th, McNair Middle School Cafeteria; Tuesday, June 12th, Holt Middle School Cafeteria; Wednesday, June 13th, Woodland Junior High Cafeteria; and Thursday, June 14th, Ramey Junior High Cafeteria. For more information, fayar.net. Kids Right at the University of Arkansas is open to any area student who will be in grades 5 through 8 in the 2012-2013 school year and who loves writing, wants to learn more about writing, or thinks that this would be a good way to spend 10 days of summer vacation. Activities include field trips, guest authors, peer revision groups, and publishing opportunities. The camp runs June 11th through the 22nd. For cost or more information, coehp.uark.edu. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, Elkins. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar. Tomorrow, Kyle Kellums will be back with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Thank you so much for listening and have a great week.